ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 19, Questions by the Sages. Vayam tuna vitripyama Uttama shloka vikrame Yach trinvatam rasagyanam Svadu svadu pade pade Vayam tuna vitripyama Uttama shloka vikrame Yach trinvatam rasagyanam Svadu svadu pade pade Vayam tuna vitripyama Uttama shloka vikrame Yach trinvatam rasagyanam Svada svadu svadu pade pade Vaishnavis. Vitripyama shall be at rest. Uttama shloka. The personality of Godhead, who is glorified by transcendental prayers. Vikrame, adventures. Yat, which. Srinvatam, by continuous hearing. Rasa, humor. Jnanam, those who are conversant with. Svadu, relishing. Svadu, palatable. Pade pade, at every step. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. We never tire of hearing the transcendental pastimes of the personality of Godhead, who is glorified by hymns and prayers. Those who have developed a taste for transcendental relationships with him relish hearing of his pastimes at every moment. Another beautiful, fairly well-known verse from the first chapter. Srila Prabhupada's purport. There's a great difference between mundane stories, fiction, or history, and the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. The histories of the whole universe contain references to the pastimes of the incarnations of the Lord. The Ramayana, the Mahabharata, and the Puranas are histories of bygone ages recorded in connection with the pastimes of the incarnations of the Lord, and therefore remain fresh even after repeated readings. For example, anyone may read Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam repeatedly throughout his whole life, and yet find in them new light of information. Mundane news is static, whereas transcendental news is dynamic. Inasmuch as spirit is dynamic and matter is static, those who develop a taste for understanding the transcendental subject matter are never tired of hearing such narrations. One is quickly satiated by mundane activities, but no one is satiated by transcendental or devotional activities. Uttama Shloka indicates that literature which is not meant for nescience, mundane literature is in the mode of darkness or ignorance, whereas transcendental literature is quite different. Transcendental literature is above the mode of darkness, and its light becomes more luminous with progressive reading and realization of the transcendental subject matter. The so-called liberated persons are never satisfied by the repetition of the words Aham Brahmasmi. Such artificial realization of Brahman becomes hackneyed, and so to relish real pleasure, they turn to the narrations of Srimad Bhagavatam. Those who are not so fortunate turn to altruism and worldly philanthropy. This means that the Mayavadi philosophy is mundane, whereas the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental. Om Jnana Tibrandasya Gnanjana Salakaya Chakshurnamitamina Tasmai Shri Gavenaha Vancha Kalpa Trubhishya Trubhisindu Bebacha Patitana Pavane Vyo Vaishnava. I'm having interesting experiences with this computer. This is a continuation of discussions about hearing about Krishna. And yesterday's class described the glories of the pastimes of Krishna, and Mother Achira gave some very wonderful examples and very, very beautiful stories of the Damodar pastime, etc. So this is kind of a continuation of the discussion of the spiritual value of hearing the pastimes. And much of Srila Prabhupada's purport here discusses the contrast with mundane subject matter, how spiritual sound and pastimes are entirely different than material sound and material pastimes. So there's a very great difference between material and spiritual sound vibration. First of all, we may think that, well, spiritual sound is in the spiritual world and mundane sound is only in the material world. But it's explained that spiritual sound actually permeates everything. In a lecture of 1968, Prabhupada said, Shabda Brahman, sound vibration. The sound is all-pervading, but this transcendental sound, just like your radio message, television sound, they cannot go beyond this earthly planet at most. But there is a sound which can penetrate the whole universe and go to the spiritual world. If that sound is potent, then it can penetrate even in this material sky and go to the spiritual sky and go to Krishna directly. That sound is Hare Krishna. Then, appropriately, Srila Prabhupada quotes from a song by Narottam Das Thakur, who we are celebrating today. And that song is, Golakar Premadana Harinam Sankirtan Ratina Jamilo Kene Taya, which means the treasure of divine love in Goloka Vrindavan has descended as the congregational chanting of the Lord Hari's holy names. Why did my attraction for the chanting never come about? I ask myself that often. In Srila Prabhupada's purport today, he spends quite a bit of time talking about the distinction between material sound and spiritual sound, so it's very important to understand that. We tend to tire of material sound. We've all experienced that. No book or song remains popular for very long, and there's a certain effect where people quickly tire of anything in this material world. I remember many, many years ago as a young person, as a teenager, we used to listen to the radio We didn't have television. We just huddled around the fire. No, we actually had television. I think we had black and white TV and three channels. So, you know, no internet, you know, no smartphones. So we listened to the radio. And one of our most popular shows was they played the Hit Parade every week. Do any of you old people remember that? Okay, there we go. You know, where they would do the countdown to the top one, number one song of the week. And we would always be curious, why? Because it would change. It'd be a different number one song. And if a song ever made it 2 weeks or 3 weeks as number one, that was like an all-time platinum something hit. Because they changed, and we got tired of it, and you wanted to hear a new song, and you wanted to hear continually, you know, different, new, variegated sound vibration. Because material sound does not satisfy one for very long. And of course, the books on the bestseller list, the New York Times bestsellers, they're continually changing. They last a little longer because print actually has a little more shelf life than music. But still, it's constantly changing. You know, movies, every week there's the top grossing movie of the week. And it'll last maybe 1 or 2 weeks to number one, and then quickly drops. You know, if you ever follow those, they just, after a couple of weeks, they just totally drop. And nobody's watching them anymore. Now, then they go on to, you know, whatever. I was going to say videos, but they don't do that anymore. They go to Netflix. Then they go to, you know, the old movie channel. And then eventually they're forgotten. So we tend to tire of all of these things, books, movie shows, whatever it is, because we continually need new experience. Now, that's the nature of the soul, right? That is the nature of the spiritual world, that it's variegated, that there's constant new variety. And Krishna provides that constant variety. That is the nature of the spiritual world. And because, of course, everything in this material world is a reflection, we have that same tendency to want to have new experience and new variety. Now, here's an interesting concept. There's something called the semantic satiation effect. So now this is your educational part of the class today. Pay attention. Okay, the semantic satiation effect means that words actually lose meaning when repeated. So I'm going to give you a little definition of this. This is basically seeing or hearing a word over and over elicits a reaction from your brain to recognize the meaning of the word. But when this repetition is rapid, neurons start to fire one after another, also causing peripheral sensory motor activity to occur in rapid succession. This then causes reactive inhibition, which is a lessening of the reaction, in this case, recognizing the word, the more the stimulus exposure there is. With each rapid and successive repetition, the ability of the brain to recognize the meaning slowly decreases, causing that feeling of being unable to recognize the word as a real word, and it begins to sound like gibberish. Now, that's what happens if you would chant a mundane word over and over again. Eventually, you know, your brain just blocks it out and has absolutely no meaning. Srila Prabhupada gave the example sometimes. I've heard this on tapes where he said, if you chant water, 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 it will not quench your thirst. Right? We've all heard that one probably. Not only will it not quench your thirst, but if you continue to chant water, 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 after a while you won't even know what water means. That's the semantic satiation effect. Now, that doesn't happen with spiritual sound and mantra, does it? So we actually have examples. We can understand, even by these material examples, how spiritual sound differs than material sound. And we have that experience. Because what happens when you attentively chant the Hare Krishna mantra over and over and over? Does it lose all meaningfulness and you just... No. Attentive chanting actually deepens the sense of meaning, right? When we chant very attentively, it becomes more meaningful, more understandable, more relishable. It's not like, God, I don't even know what I'm chanting anymore. I'm just so bewildered. No, it doesn't happen with spiritual sound. So that's the difference in hearing and chanting. Spiritual sound vibration, Shabda Brahman. The Hare Krishna mantra has been number one on the hit parade for Vaishnavas for thousands of years. It's never gone off the list as number one, at least for 500 years, since Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu really popular. The Hare Krishna mantra has been there forever. It's in the Puranas, you know. It's always been chanted by Vaishnavas, but it became particularly prominent after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's advent. So at least for 500 or 600 years, this has been number one for all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. I was calculating that if you chant 16 rounds a day, you're chanting about 1 million names of Krishna per year. And if you've been a devotee 40, 50 years, do the math. So after 50 million times chanting Hare Krishna, are we tired of it? Are we bored with it? No, not at all. Now, sometimes devotees have trouble chanting, or it might be difficult, or it's hard to find the time, or I can't focus, I can't... we may have a lot of difficulties in chanting nicely. But I haven't ever heard devotees say that they're tired of the mantra. I wish we could mix it up with some other mantras. Let's get some new ones in here. This one just isn't working. No, that's not the problem, right? The problem is not with the mantra. It's not with getting bored or tired. The mantra never becomes stale, as Prabhupada says, never hackneyed and never old. It's always fresh to us. So this is something that we experience. Prabhupada said, well, just by hearing that, I'll go get back to in a minute. So chanting is always fresh, and hearing is always fresh. Of course, when we are chanting, we're also hearing. This verse is mostly about hearing. But the main thing about chanting is that we are hearing it, right? In other words, it's not just, because chanting is beneficial to all living entities, but for ourselves, the chanting is beneficial because we are hearing it. So it's always Shravanam Kirtanam. Everything always comes back to chant, to hearing. Now, another way we hear is obviously through reading. There's no difference when we say, we're talking about the process of hearing, of Shravanam. There's no difference between hearing a devotee speak or reading Srila Prabhupada's books or other transcendental literatures. It's the same process. So Prabhupada mentioned this in the purport. The devotee can read the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam repeatedly throughout his whole life and yet find new light in information. Now, this is something I think many of us have experienced. This is a very real experience because many devotees read the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita over and over. Pralada Maharaj is coming, I think, at the end of this month, I saw. So anyway, he'll be here. And he's a very avid Bhagavad Gita student. And somebody asked him, he didn't really want to say it, but somebody worked it out of him. And he admitted that he's read all the way through Bhagavad Gita about 350 times. If I could read it 3 to 5 times, I'd be happy, So he's about 100 times ahead of me. Anyway, it's amazing. He's just reading Bhagavad Gita over and over and over again. And he's obviously never tires of it, never becomes old, because it is always fresh and new. New things are learned. We read things that we... Sometimes, and we've had this experience, you'll see, I didn't even remember this was here in the first canto, even though we read it a couple times. And even if we have heard it, and we've read it, and we remember it, the other thing that happens, as Prabhupada is saying, deeper understanding and realization occurs every time we hear these transcendental words. So that's the difference between spiritual and material sound. Spiritual sound is always enlivening, it's always fresh. Srila Prabhupada said in Purport 10.1.13, even though advanced devotees hear continually about the Lord for years, they still feel these topics are coming to them as newer and fresher. Therefore, such devotees cannot give up hearing of the pastimes of Lord Krishna. So this is what the sages are saying. They say, we never tire of hearing the pastimes of the Personality of Godhead. For he's called Uttama Shloka. So, what is the effect of this hearing? Why do we like hearing so much? Of course, we're just naturally attracted to Krishna. But it's described there are two results of hearing the Vedic scriptures from the pure devotee. One is we become detached from material things, become purified. And the second is we become attached or attracted to Krishna. So we become detached as we receive the spiritual knowledge. As we're actually understanding and hearing Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, we realize that we are not material. We're different from the body. We begin to realize our eternal relationship with Krishna. Our mind intelligence become convinced. It's another reason we need to read a lot, because the mind's always trying to cause us trouble. And, well, what about this and what about that? So our minds, need to be convinced, and our intelligence is convinced by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then our attraction to the material world lessens, and the mind becomes purified. And as the mind becomes purified, the second part happens. the mind becomes attracted to Krishna, to Krishna's devotees, to Krishna's service, and to Krishna's pastimes. Something we don't maybe even understand materially, but our spiritual nature has been being revived by this process of hearing. And then the real change for the spirit soul is a change of heart, a transformation and spiritualization of our consciousness. So this process of purification happens through sound vibration. Prabhupada says the nectar devotion. The beginning of Krishna consciousness and devotional service is hearing, in Sanskrit called shravanam. All people should be given the chance to come and join devotional parties, like the Sankirtan party, so that they may hear. When one links his ears to give oral reception to the transcendental vibrations, he can quickly become purified and cleansed in the heart. So, we all want to develop this taste. We may feel we haven't developed so much taste, or we may feel taste from time to time. So how does it develop? Mainly in association with pure devotees. By hearing from pure devotees, taste comes about, the ruchi. In the Bhaktisandarbha Anucheta 11, for anybody who's counting, Jiva Goswami says this. First he quotes from the Srimad Bhagavatam, "O twice-born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity for hearing the message of Vasudeva." In other words, this verse from Bhagavatam directly says, the result of serving devotees is gaining attraction for the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then Jiva Goswami says, "Generally, taste develops by association with great devotees. By serving great devotees, taste for the Lord's topics develop. Upon meeting these devotees, one develops faith in worshiping the Lord, and then a desire to hear. From hearing, taste develops. Hearing from great devotees has immediate effect." So our verse today is talking about the sages who are very advanced, and they're talking about they already have that taste. So this is saying, this is how we get that taste. From hearing, that taste will develop. In other words, and if the great sages already have the taste, what do they want to do? They want to hear some more. They want more hearing. So it's a very reciprocal relationship here between hearing and developing taste. Then, Jiva cites another very, very nice and important verse from the third canto, chapter 25, verse 25 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. "In the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and the heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and therefore he is freed and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begins." Srila Prabhupada's purport says, the process of advancing in Krishna consciousness is described here. The first point is one must seek the associations of persons who are Krishna conscious and engage in devotional service. Without such association, one cannot make advancement. Now, expanding upon this a little bit more, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says in his purport to 325.25, "Only by association with devotees does the mind develop attraction to the Lord. The stages are described here. The previous verse mentioned association should be desired. Then faith arises. From excellent association of devotees, stories of my pastime became nectar for the ears. From inferior association, there's only bhajana kriya." In other words, even associating with devotees who are not very advanced, one may develop some attraction for hearing and chanting, but the stories do not become nectar. Thus, from excellent association, the stories cause anartanavritti. In other words, one becomes purified only when really one hears some of an advanced devotee. Then those stories become nishta, one becomes fixed. These topics then produce ruchi, and ruchi, of course, means taste. They are pleasing to the ear and the heart, and then Vishnu goes on to say how one progresses all the way up to the stage of prema bhakti. So the point here is that hearing should be from a pure devotee, and one may even begin hearing and chanting, but only by the association of pure devotional service does one become purified and that leads to development of taste, of ruchi. Prabhupada describes this, let's see where I'm at here. Prabhupada describes this process really nicely in another verse and purport here at 422.25. It says, the devotee should gradually increase the culture of devotional service by constant hearing of the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These pastimes are like the ornamental decorations on the ears of devotees. By rendering devotional service and transcending the material qualities, one can easily be fixed in transcendence in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This verse, this is Prabhupada, this verse is especially mentioned to substantiate the devotional process of hearing the subject matter. We can increase our propensity for devotional service by hearing Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam from realized souls. The more we hear from realized souls, the more we make advancement in devotional service and devotional life. The more we advance in devotional life, the more we become detached from the material world. The more we become detached from the material world, as advised by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the more we increase in attachment for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Srila Prabhupada, actually, if you analyze his purport, he gives four steps. He tells us his four-step process that really correspond to the stage of devotional service of how we make advancement. He says, first we have to hear Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam from realized soul. That's like Shraddha, Sadhu, Sangha. Then he says we advance in the process of devotional service, in that process, Bhajna, Kriya, hearing and chanting. Then we become detached from the material world. That's the stages of Anartha Vritti and the Nishta. And he says then we become attached to Krishna, which is Ashakti and then Ruchi. So, very clear process that's, you know, confirmed by all of our acharyas, confirmed over and over by Srila Prabhupada. Nothing really too mysterious about this. You know, we simply engaging in sadhana bhakti under the orders of the spiritual master, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam Bhagavad Gita from the pure devotee, one begins to advance. And Krishna will begin to reveal himself to the devotee in many ways, even for a neophyte devotee such as ourselves. So the process of Krishna consciousness gives immediate result. It's described that there are, in the Nectar Devotion, that there are six results of bhakti. And the first two results are that it gives immediate satisfaction and relief of distress, and the second one is that it awards auspiciousness. Auspiciousness means that it's, you know, it's good for the whole world, it gives one all good qualities, all these things. And these first two stages, these first two results I'm mentioning because they are there at the stage of sadhana. So even in the beginning, one experiences relief of distress and this all auspiciousness. So that's there, right from the beginning. And from the beginning, some of this taste is experienced by the devotee. I would venture to guess, if I had to speculate, that there's nobody in this room who would be in this room if you never experienced some taste in Krishna consciousness. You would have gone somewhere else to look for that. So I'm not saying that we're all feeling ecstasy at every moment, which I was, but no. But we have all experienced the taste of Krishna consciousness. And in the very beginning, there's an immediate taste given by Krishna. And this is described in Bhakti Samrita Sindhu, actually verses 1-349, is Chaya Ratya Vasa. Sometimes it's called para attachment or shadow attachment. This is sort of the preliminary taste or attachment the devotee will often give. Now, it is described by Rupa Goswami that the taste is unstable. In other words, it may be fleeting. It may not last. It may not stay there forever. And sometimes I've heard devotees say this, oh, I was really ecstatic when I first came to Krishna consciousness, and now it's kind of seemed to fade. That's typical. That's described in our scriptures by Rupa Goswami. That's what's going to happen. It goes, you know, but for it to become... because it's unstable, but to go from unstable to stable realization, that requires the process of sadhana bhakti, the hearing and chanting. So then one develops a real taste. In other words, the initial taste is there based upon actually the taste of the guru, of the spiritual master. That's why it's called shadow, or sometimes it's called reflection. The basha, this word basha, abasha, means reflection. Remember they're talking about the different stages of chanting, you know, the beginning stage, the offensive stage, and that clearing stage, sometimes it was called abasa by Haridas Thakur, namabas. That's like it's like a reflection. That's what it means. It's compared to the sun. You know, in other words, just as the sun comes up in the morning and it's dark, you can't see anything, you know, the sun starts to come up, what do you see? You see things around you and you see yourself, right? And then eventually you see the sun. So, you know, material world, yourself, Krishna, spiritual world. In other words, it all begins to become illuminated, even right in the beginning, from the first dawning of the sun. So the very first reflection of the sun of devotional service causes this awakening and this realization. Okay, since I have time, I'm going to read, because this is a very interesting issue, and I think it's something we all experience as neophyte devotees. This is how Prabhupada describes and explains the shadow attachment in nectar devotion. He says this imitative attachment can divide into two headings, shadow attachment and para attachment. Sometimes it's found a person actually attached to material enjoyment or salvation has the good fortune to associate with pure devotees while they're engaged in chanting the holy name of the Lord. By the good grace of the Lord, will they also cooperate and join in the chanting? At that time, simply by the association of such pure devotees, the moon-like rays from their heart reflect on him, and by the influence of pure devotees, he may show some likeness of attachment caused by inquisitiveness. That probably happened to all of us. But this is very flickering. And that by the manifestation of such shadow attachment, one feels the disappearance of material pangs, then it is called para-attachment. Such shadow or para attachment can develop if one associates with a pure devotee or visits holy places like Vrindavan or Mathura. And if an ordinary man develops such attachment for Krishna and fortunately performs devotional activities in association of pure devotees, he can also rise to the platform of pure devotional service. Oh, and by the way, Rupa Goswami also mentioned things like associating with a pure devotee or visiting a holy place. He also says, like, seeing the Rathyatra card, that this can invoke this kind of, response from somebody. The conclusion is that transcendental attachment is so powerful that such attachment is seen manifested even in some common man by the association of pure devotees, it can bring one to the perfectional stage. In other words, it's the beginning. You know, it's like, you know, one often gains some taste. This gives us a little preview. In a sense, I think it's Krishna's mercy. It's the mercy of the Guru. It gives us this little bit of understanding, a little bit of taste of what can be there for us all the time, 24 hours a day, if we perfect our lives, if we become purified. So, Krishna is very kind to us. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very kind, and Srila Prabhupada is very kind. So, occasionally, we get these glimpses of the spiritual world. We get some taste, or we get some realization and chanting a holy name or reading a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. And these things keep us inspired. They help us to continue the process of sadhana so that the process of purification of the heart can take place. And the shadow attachment then transforms to real attachment over time. And then we become eventually like the sages here who never tire of the pastimes of Krishna. Okay? Thank you very much. Comments or questions? Trivikram.
So it's stated in the spiritual world, the object and the name are non-different. That's a little difficult to understand. I don't know if you could show some insight.
The subject and object are the same, or the and again, probably gives an example. Something in the material world, the name is different than the thing itself, right? In other words, water doesn't quench your thirst. You know, I can call this anything. I can call it a podium. I can call it a table. I can call it something in Spanish or Hindi or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's different. Spiritual world is absolute. So the thing in itself are the same. In other words, if I say, if I in the spiritual world, if I invoke the name of Krishna, Krishna's there. Actually, it's here right in here too as well. I just don't maybe perceive it fully. No. So yeah, that's the absolute nature of the spiritual world, and that's what Prabhupada was talking about Shabda Brahman. You know, that it's absolute. And the other thing, Prabhupada talked in the purport. I was going to mention that. He said the difference between static and dynamic. Remember that in the purport? He said material is static and the spiritual world is dynamic. And I was thinking about what this means. Well, of course, we can just say, well, it's something spiritual material. But what are the qualities of something that's spiritual that make it different than something that's static? Well, the qualities of the spiritual world are things that are sat, chit, and ananda, right? So in the material world, if I have nothing is eternal, nothing gives us full knowledge, and is everything blissful? We're saying, everything is blissful in the spiritual world. In the material world, it's filled with misery. I was just thinking, and even in terms of sound vibration, I do follow the news, and everything you look at is basically depressing, right? It's all about something miserable happening, either happening to somebody, some crime or something, or happening in the world. You know, there's very little, and even if somebody said, well, I'm going to put a paper of only happy news out there, everyone know it's not true. that was a distortion of reality because, this is the nature of the material world. Everything's temporary. Everything is unhappy and ignorance pervades. Okay, anything else? Oh, Dharmaraj.
Earlier you were talking about, using a mundane word eventually become gibberish. So I was reflecting on Valmiki. When he first started, he could have only says Mara, and which means to kill.
Oh yeah.
But he was chanting Mara, Mara, and that eventually became.
That's Valmiki.
Yes.
Valmiki. Oh yeah.
Yeah, and then eventually that became Rama,
right? Right.
So with a transcendental intent and proper guidance, then that transcends, whilst in the mundane sense it doesn't.
Yeah. That's a good example. And a few days ago, I think it was Madan Mahan giving class, talked about, because the verse was about, unintentional chanting of the holy name, right? And then he gave the example of a Jalamil, and a similar thing. Even if one is not even intending to chant the holy name, the spiritual nature of it is absolute, therefore it works. Even without conscious intent. Good example, Mara and Rama.
Also, you mentioned about taking the association of devotees, and from that, the states develop. So, in the beginning, that can be difficult in some cases. Like, for example, we are in the temple room doing our japa, then you find different devotees do varieties of japa, in the way they're pronounced or how it comes out orally. And for you to be there to concentrate depends on our conditioning. It might be difficult to concentrate and be in that association. So, and to tolerate the different aspects of how a devotee may appear to act or not to act. So, in the beginning, it takes some extra effort as well. So how do we deal with that?
How are we dealing with the ability to concentrate?
And also to be in the association of the bodies. And initially where we are not accustomed to the practices or the tendencies or what we have to put up with to be in the association.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why it's called practice. That's what it's sadhana. In other words, we're doing something that we're not accustomed to doing. We're not accustomed to, sitting quietly and chanting for an hour and a half or 2 hours every day. So it does take practice, and that's what it is. It's constant practice, And I remember I went to years back the japa retreats were popular. I went to one of them with Satchinanda Swami, and I remember one thing that somebody that they said there was the idea that, in other words, just start. I forget how they said it, but it's like, in other words, start from right now. In other words. Okay, so your mind is going all over, you can't concentrate, you can't focus, so just chant one mantra, concentrate. Just focus now. Just start focusing on one mantra, then the next one, then the next one. You know, and it's a practice of drawing your mind back, forgetting all the other distractions and whatever, and just trying to do it again. And you find the more you do that, the longer periods of time you're able to focus and concentrate. You know, and I think environment makes a difference too. You know, I know I do this myself. Sometimes we end up chanting, not always in the best environment, you know. In other words, where we're quiet and early in the morning like that, trying to chant later in the day and we're distracted and things. So, you know, you have to just use our intelligence and try to find the best place for us to focus the best on chanting, because I think it really is the key in our spiritual life and to advancement, you know, is good chanting of our rounds. At least one of the keys. Yeah. There's a good...
Semantic satiation.
What's that?
It's like semantic satiation.
Yeah.
How do people come up with stuff like that? And how, you know what I mean? That it was probably a research study or...
Oh, yeah. Well,
it's like so ridiculous.
Well, see, being a psychologist myself, believe me, these psychologists have not a whole lot better to do than think of all kinds of possible things like this. I mean,
anybody could figure that out without, like, overspeaking.
Well, sure. I mean, because Supersoul gave them intelligence to figure it out is how it happens. But, I don't even know who would have tried that. You know, like, let's see what happens if I chant, you know, we'll see.
Anyway, the other thing I was thinking of is that with music, you know, in terms of being lasting, like there does seem to be some types of music, you know, that stay, like that have been inspired by God, some religious songs, and
yeah,
you know,
that's
like
true.
Beethoven just, you know, had this inspiration from divine inspiration. It seems to, you know,
I think it's because they're in higher modes.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know that the mode of goodness tends to endure, the mode of ignorance and passion will tend to destroy and dissipate. So, you know, yes, Beethoven's definitely more in the mode of goodness than a modern rock song, you know, and therefore it probably endures more. And some of these people were actually religious. I mean, some of them were actually very inspired. Originally, the classical music was all church music, right? I mean, it was all religious to begin with. So, and the remnants of that continued for a while. Now it's all, you know, all over the place. But, yeah, that's there. So it's not like everything is all the same. There's variety, there's modes of nature in this material world. And so we'll see differential effects like that. Yeah. Okay. Are we done? One more. Oh, we have CPD money. Okay. Let's see what I philosophically misspoke.
There's been mundane music forever. It wasn't all originally religious church music. I mean, maybe we have recordings of some of the church music, but it was folk songs. It's all about
Yeah.
And in defense of rock and roll, I mean, it's only been around a few decades, and we're still listening to the Beatles, you know.
Well, that's true. Okay. There's a little bit more shelf life for some of it. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.